Canucks Central Tuesday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Visit Kintec.net. This hour of Canucks Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Canucks coming off a overtime loss to Les Habitants. The Montreal Canadiens beating them 5-4 last night in what was another game where the Canucks blow a third period lead. They'll be in Washington tomorrow, licking their wounds, trying to get back in the win column, Zach.
And it doesn't get any easier against the Capitals and
or Carolina, or Toronto, or Winnipeg.
No, it'll be fun to watch Alex Ovechkin, but the way he's scoring goals right now, it's like if the puck gets in his vicinity, it finds a way to get it get behind the goaltender. So, like, it's pretty terrifying, the prospects of facing Ovi and the Capitals tomorrow.
Yeah, Caps have been obviously one of the better teams in the league, 26-10-4. They're kind of like the Canucks of last year, where nobody really expected them to be this good, but they are this good. After a good offseason, they've really made the most of it. All right, that's what's to come. Let's get to the open on Canucks Central.
Welcome to the open.
Oh! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
The open on Canucks Central, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. And as mentioned, the Canucks blew a lead last night in Montreal. They were up 3-1 after goals 20 seconds apart from JT Miller and Jonathan Lekkerbäcki. They carried a 3-2 lead into the third period. Weren't able to hold on to that. They did, you know, cut that 4-3 deficit down and force overtime, which is nice. But at the end of the day, I'm looking at this as another blown lead, Sat. It's another game where the Canucks had not just a lead, they had a multiple goal lead, and then they had a third period lead, which was essentially automatic for this team last year, and they blew it. They now have 6 overtime losses when leading after 2 periods this year. That is by far, and they double up any other team in the league in this mark. They have 3 more than any other team. 6 overtime losses when leading after 2 periods. Sure, they don't have a regulation loss when losing after 2, when leading after 2 periods, but they haven't been able to close out enough of these games. I mean, you know, you have an extra 3 points, let's say, you know, all of a sudden you're a little bit more comfortable in your playoff spots. If you closed out all of them as you did last year through the first half of the season, the first 3 quarters of the season, you'd be right there with Edmonton at 51 points on the year. Now, maybe that's an unrealistic expectation, but bottom line is this has happened way too often this year for a team that made closing out games look easy last season.
Yeah, and you know, the coach has bemoaned that as well, right? You can see a sense of frustration in Tocchet's. You saw it last night when he spoke to the media too, and you know, talking to the media today, speaking about how there are too many guys who weren't willing to play through bodies last night, and also just not being bold when you have the lead. Like, you need to be able to meet pressure with pressure, which he brings up yet again. Yep. It took him a while to bring that phrase back, but he's been really using it the past few games here and trying to get his message across to the guys. And when, for all that talk, right, like for all the talk about you need to play a lot better and make better decisions, does it also come down to a personnel issue here when you look at for the fact that you don't have Pettersson? Mm-hmm. And when you look at JT was great last night. The one place he struggled in win was faceoffs. The other centers had a tough night. Pew Suter, difficult night. You know, and I think he's played really well recently, but now you're seeing the last few games that, okay, his levels dropped off a little bit. Garland, whether it's on him or Suter, both of them have struggled. Like last night, how often do you see the Canucks play a game where the opposition controls over 80% of the shots when Garland is on the ice?
Very seldom.
That's what happened last night.
Yeah.
you know, and that's just something we're not used to seeing. And I think that struggle down the middle, we know the back end has its problems. I think those things do attribute to not being able to hold on, be able to hold on to leads. You need to be stronger down the spine. And we spoke about that with the team last year. We said the spine of the Canucks, their defense, their goaltending, and their centers, they allow the Canucks to really be strong and robust defensively and allow them to see games through. We're not really seeing that this season.
We're not, you know, and you're certainly missing a couple of key pieces. Hughes comes back, but you're still out of Pettersson and Hronek, which I think is a big part of this conversation that we'll get to in a moment, because even when Hughes was down, it was almost like, well, we're not talking enough about Filip Hronek. Mm-hmm. But, you know, those are two key pieces. And as you are missing these pieces, what have we seen from the Canucks over the last little while? Like, it's been a problem almost all year, but they haven't controlled play as well as they did last year. Last year, even when they weren't generating a ton of shots and chances, you know, they'd still have a good amount of offensive zone time, and they could kill time away that way, like just have the puck cycling along the wall in the O zone and just eat away a shift or maybe even two shifts. And next thing you know, you're halfway through the third period and nothing's really happened yet, which is, you know, good if you're the team in the lead. But that doesn't happen anymore for this group. They don't play in that same way. They're unable to make those crisp plays and smart, simple plays that allow time to eat away and just get the game going, get the game moving in a way that is positive for you when you've got a lead and you're trying to close out the game and eat up time.
So to that point, and I think you're bang on, not having as much of a cycle game, especially down low in the offensive zone, is really taken away from a lot of their zone time. Because we know the Canucks right now, most of their offense is centered on how to get shots through from the point, especially when Hughes is up there, and having the layered screens, right, and creating chaos and creating chances off of that, and trying to hit the backdoor seam pass on that and hit the trailer. But it's, a lot of it is based on the points, right? Somebody coming in weak side or somebody taking a shot, and that's how you're generating. Now, if that's your look, there isn't a lot that gets to it, right? You have the puck on the point, you look for a lane, you pass it back and forth, and you take a shot. So if you have the absence of the cycle, there's no zone time.
Yeah.
You become very one-dimensional with how you're attacking and also wearing down defense. And I think your attacks from the point would also, I think, be a lot more dangerous if you do have a cycle to get your defenders a bit tired. And once you get the puck up and you get the screens going, you put the goalie in a position where he doesn't see the puck as often. Now you get loose pucks and guys can perhaps find some space and put the puck past the goaltender, right? All these things are tied in. And when you're not able to play the puck down low as much and you take away some of that low to high plays or even high to low plays, I think those types of things don't allow your offense to be very diverse. So the Canucks are very boring in that sense when we watch them play offensively. It's just point shots, guys trying to get tips. If it doesn't happen, the puck goes out, and here we go again, trying to get out of your own zone, try to get through the neutral zone, and try to find other point shots. And that, to me, is not a sustainable way of playing hockey, and also defending, because you're not spending enough time in the offensive zone, to your point.
It's something that they did so well last year, and I think that's, you know, when you see them spending a lot more time in their own zone, you're more prone to making that one mistake that ends up leading into a big scoring chance. Or you see the panic play that we've seen a lot that Rick Tocchet mentioned last night. Like, guys just got to bear down and be able to make a play. And far too often, that's not been happening. You think about the Seattle game where they blow that 4-1 lead. I mean, how many just glaring mistakes, really just uncomposed plays that they made that led to giving up that lead. And all of this stems from not being able to break out cleanly, spending too much time in your defensive zone. Just a simple look at how different it was last year. And this may not seem like a lot, but per the NHL Edge data, 1%. So that doesn't seem like a lot, but they spend 1% fewer time in the offensive zone than they did last year when they were one of the better teams in the league. And that means they're spending a percentage point more in their own zone. So yeah, it's not a ton, but you know, how much is that? Is that a shift? Is that a couple of shifts? It adds up over time, and it's certainly played out in some of the games that the Canucks have had this year blow up in their face.
Well, we're not talking about the difference of, you know, 9 or 10 points. We're talking about the 6 OTL losses, for instance, yeah. right? Or these are losses after with you blowing a lead that we're talking about, right? So 6 of those losses coming after blowing a lead, you take 4 of those away.
Yeah.
That's 4 extra points.
Yeah.
And you probably should take 5 away. You shouldn't, you know, it should be 1. It shouldn't be 6, right? That's what it should be at this point in the season. Maybe 2. So let's say 4 for argument's sake, right? So 4 of those points should be yours. That 1% or 0.5% is probably the difference in those 3 to 4 points. But it comes down to a personnel thing. Like, we know the back end is problematic, right? They need more. And we've seen guys play admirably for stretches. But we saw with Desharnais where he had a couple of really good games and last night a tough game for him, right? And we've seen these moments now where these guys are unable to really do it consistently. And even a guy like Carson Soucy, who was so good last year.
14 minutes last night.
Has been playing better, you know, had been playing better. And then in the last few games, his game has slipped again, right? And these were guys that you were depending on. But at the same time, you were not asking Carson Soucy to play the role he's playing this year or last year.
No.
And he was injured for half the season as well, right? So now when you don't have Hronek and you didn't have Hughes for a few games, I think that exasperates things. But I think the Hronek one, and yes, of course the Canucks need more help on the blue line. But not having Hronek makes a huge difference. And I know, you know, there's been this argument when Hronek's been out that Hughes has been fine without him and Hronek doesn't, it's overrated and all those things. And I think that's complete hogwash because I think they're even better when Hughes and Hronek are together. But one thing that we don't pay enough attention to is how much individually Hronek does away from Quinn Hughes as well on the PK.
Mm-hmm.
When Hughes isn't on the ice, especially the last 10 minutes and then in third periods when the Canucks have the lead, they will split up their defenses more, right? They'll split up the D pairs more. You would see Hronek and Hughes both play away from each other more often down the stretch in games, especially when they had the lead, and that's how they salted games away. Not having that other defenseman is a huge blow to this team, and we're barely talking about Philip Hronek.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of closing games out, and especially for a blue line that's been so maligned this year and had so many problems, not having Hronek has been a massive blow, and I don't think enough attention has been put on it.
It's funny, you take away like Devon Taves from the Avalanche. Yeah, it's not Cale Makar, but it's going to expose Makar a little bit more. It's going to mean you're leaning on Makar that much more. It means you're having to elevate somebody to now play with Makar. What does that do to the rest of your D pairs, right? And then we've seen that happen with the Canucks. Now Myers is forced into playing a few more minutes. Now you're leaning on Soucy and Juulsen a little bit more. Desharnais is having to play over 20 minutes in some nights. And so, you know, this whole idea of like, yeah, you lose Hronek, but now you're forcing guys into playing bigger minutes, bigger spots. And for a D-core that's already kind of, you know, not as talented as you would like it to be. It's an area that this group is definitely looking to improve on. Well, now it's getting more exposed. And so, yes, it's very obvious when, yeah, you lose Quinn Hughes, but the guy that's been out this entire time, this entire month, that's been a really difficult stretch, is Philip Hronek. And I think you're getting an idea of like, yeah, this guy's not just a product of being pulled around by Quinn Hughes and how good Quinn Hughes is.
Yeah, and I think it's something that, you know, fans are bringing up too. We heard on the postgame show, Sia called him from North Van and brought it up about the game last night, made a great point. I saw others bring up the point about, you know, Philip Hronek. So you're starting to see the absence, especially late in games and especially defensively. Like Hronek would have a few loud mistakes. He had a couple bad moments, and yeah, most players did, and he wasn't perfect by any means in the 21 games he played prior to injury, but no player on the Canucks is still better than he was at goals against per 60.
Yeah.
1.71 per 60, which was the best number on the team. The only guy who has a better one is Max Sasson, but a very limited small sample with him, right? As far as, you know, a total ice time per game is 10 minutes. He was playing 18 at 5-on-5 and, you know, fewer games so far. But that's it. As far as defensemen go, Hughes is at 1.91. The next best defenseman that's a regular is Carson Soucy at 2.35.
Yeah.
And he's 13th on the team. So not having the guy who was the player, the fewest amount of goals were getting scored on,
mm-hmm,
not having him, I think, makes a pretty big difference.
Makes a really big difference. Canucks were 11-7-3 when Philip Hronek left the lineup. They are now 18-12-9 on the season. So yeah, since November 27th, when Philip Hronek left the lineup in that 5-4 loss to the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Canucks have just 7 wins. in what is almost a 20-game stretch to this point. If you were thinking, yeah, why can't this team close out leads? Philip Pronick might be a big reason as to why that has been the case for this group. One of the positives of last night, though, Sat, Jonathan Lekker-Mackey, goal and an assist. He looked the part, goes into to play with Miller and Besser, and immediately flashes what you wanted to see. And on that two-on-one, he looks off Myers and then beats Sam Montembeau short side, flashing that shot that well, we've seen quite a bit at the AHL level. We saw quite a bit in Penticton at training camp. It's exactly what you wanted to see from the rookie for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, I mean, that shot is something that obviously plays, right? And just everything he did on the shot, the way he looked off Myers, the way he changed the angle slightly and just placed it perfectly above the pad and just not out of reach for the save by Montembeau. And just his ability to find open space. You saw it in the game too. And a player that I still think needs to get stronger, obviously, can get quicker, obviously.
Got hit pretty good by Gouley, right?
Yeah, and not too long after Montreal scored. And it was interesting hearing Tocchet last night, you know, when asked about IMAC. Hey, did you guys have enough of a response? I know JT threw a big hit on Hudson and all that, but the coach kind of sounded like he wanted to see more of a physical response for the rookie getting laid out the way he did.
Yeah.
But you could totally see that Lekker-Mackey had to learn some things from his previous stint with the Canucks. And I'm really curious to see how it develops the next few games. I know you're big on the Calder thing, and maybe if he keeps scoring 2 points last night, right? But I think it was enough encouraging things we saw last night from him that I'm interested to see what he does on Wednesday in this next little stretch here. And even when Pettersson comes back, let's say Pettersson comes back on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I think you keep Lekker-Mackey in the lineup.
He is on an emergency loan right now, so I guess, you know, they'd have to finagle the salary cap a little bit with their roster move. But
I think what you could do, and maybe it's harsh to Sasson, who's been so good.
Yeah.
You send Sasson down. You can make the emergency recall a regular recall for Lekker-Mackey and go that way. Like, that's the way I would go about it.
But they need a little bit more offensive flair on this team.
They do. And you know what? Like, I know Bick's been making this point too on the postgame show, and I think you're bang on about this too. They don't have enough of variety on their wings.
Yeah.
You know, and Daniel Sprong couldn't work. And I don't think it's so much of the coach doesn't like those types of wingers. You just have to be responsible. And the Canucks just haven't had responsible wingers that can do some of the things a guy like Sprong could do, a guy like Kuzmenko could do. But that's Lekker-Mackey. Like, Lekker-Mackey is responsible and smart. And if he can hold up in those situations, he has a different skill set than anybody else on this team on the wing.
Yeah. And, you know, I know, like, you know, as we talked about earlier, they need to get the cycle game going. But I don't know. It doesn't feel like they've got a lot of wall guys in this winger group anyway. So, you know, they need to find different ways to make it work right now, because what they are doing isn't working quite enough. So, yeah, like, should Lekker-Mackey stay when Pettersson is available to come off of injured reserve? I 100% believe that that should be the case. Does that mean you got to send down Sasson? Maybe Phil DiGiuseppe? I don't know. But you've got to make a move here that makes sense to keep Jonathan Lekker-Mackey on the roster while you are struggling through a period where offense is dried up, you don't score a ton, and Lekker-Mackey can help you in that area. You know, it's like they've just... Nils Höglander again last night, you know, still not doing much, still stuck on 2 goals for the year, hasn't had much of an offensive influence on this team, gets a little bit of trust from the head coach late in the third period and ends up taking, it might have been soft, but it's by the textbook, like it's a penalty what he did.
Yeah, and I know
not something you get called on a lot at the end of a game, a tie game especially.
Yeah, well, and honestly, the one thing go on.
I'm just... You know, it was pretty obvious, like, hey, you lost your stick and you were just like looking to hit somebody and you Josh Anderson fell pretty easily. But you know what? It's fair play to Josh Anderson to get the penalty in that moment.
Yeah, but also, like, I think for all this talk about Höglander being small, but Höglander's like a little fire hydrant.
Yeah,
like,
he's kind of strong.
Let's not act like he's this tiny little guy who can't even defend himself.
Wasn't
like
he first in fitness testing?
Yeah, he's a strong little, like, you know, little guy. He's like, and he's not even that small. I think he's like at like 5'10 maybe. Like, he's not, like, I know he's listed at 5'9. He could be 5'10. Like, we saw him at training camp. He's not as small as you
think.
Built
like a fridge.
He is. Like, absolutely he is. So I don't think this is a weak player that, you know, barely shoved him. And the way he steps into it too and centers himself before it, like it's not a smart move. But I will agree, because Montreal did run a lot of interference throughout the game, and that wasn't getting called. Now you call this interference call, right? And then it was slightly more blatant, right? But I do agree with the inconsistency. That's my issue. It's like it's not a smart play by Hoglander. The officials are so inconsistent with how they call these things, and last night's game was. I hope that Hoglander doesn't get treated too harshly and he loses confidence based on it, because he played a pretty good game last night. But I think if Lekromäki can find a way to stick, at least I think it shows what this forward group can need more of. Whether it's him, whether it's Hoglander getting going, or whether it's finding a player via trade.
I mean, you got Brock, DeBrusk, and Garland all going, but like, who's that next guy? It's been Sherwood mostly.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't expect Sherwood to keep up at this scoring pace when he's never done it in his career. So who's going to be that guy that steps up here in the second half of the season?
Well, it needs to be Pettersson and Miller. But on the wings, you're right. Like, that's what you're searching for. And I think the hope had been Heinen would be one of those guys, but that hasn't really materialized.
And that's why I think you got to keep Lekromäki and see where this goes for the next little while on this group. All right, a couple of more things to get to in the Canucks Central Roundup before Frank Saravalli joins us, as we'll get into some more trade discussions, which I know Minor Matt in Abbotsford was hoping for when the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox 650-650. A couple of things to note in the Canucks Central Roundup, things you need to know. Josh Yoey reporting that the Rangers offered Mika Zibanejad for Miller earlier this season, to which the Canucks said no.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, it makes sense. I like Zibanejad, and I think there's a better player there than what he's shown.
Yeah.
But it's,
It's a tough one if you are, like, look, they're the same age. Zibanejad has a bit of a bigger contract. They both have no move clauses.
He has an extra year as Zibanejad, right?
He's got an extra year as well.
His extra year, slightly higher AAV. And at their peaks, like, is he a significantly better player than JT?
No. Not for me, at least.
Now, if you get to a point where, let's say, like, you have to move JT, is it better to move him for a player like Zibanejad than somebody who's going to be a massive downgrade? I can understand that argument. But if you're worried about JT falling off, would you not be worried about the same thing with Zibanejad?
Which we may be seeing right before our eyes already with Zibanejad.
Yeah, and he's 31, right? So, I mean, it's just, it doesn't seem like the move now. He is Swedish. Maybe him and Pettersson get along.
Yeah.
But I'm just kidding. But yeah, I get it. But at the same time, I can understand the intrigue as well. Like if you did consider doing it.
We'll ask Frank about this. He had Elias Pettersson on his latest trade targets list. The only Canuck listed on that at number 25. The Young Stars tournament in Penticton won't happen this summer. They couldn't get commitment from other teams. We'll have a 2-game series with the Kraken next summer to kick off festivities for the next season. HGTV has a new address. All the latest HGTV shows are now available on channel 409 on Rogers Xfinity TV. Frank Saravalli joins us next on Canuck Central.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there, Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.